I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sun is up. It's shining on the ballpark. 50 degrees for first pitch. Sounds pretty good. We're joined by the Tiger manager. Happy opening day, AJ.
We are happy to be home. That was about an eight-week road trip from spring training to California and leads us back to downtown Detroit. So we're pumped to be here.
From your position right now, and you get a chance to see the excitement from the players, you'll certainly see the excitement from the fans on the way to the ballpark, in the ballpark. What's your level of excitement, and how much does the environment play and amp things up when you finally get going?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, we love playing at home, and you know, this group – almost to a man, saw the ballpark alive, you know, for the last September and into the playoffs. And so this is an electric environment when our people come out and support us. And it's a thrill. I mean, obviously opening day is special. The home opener is always special in Detroit. It's like a holiday in Michigan, and as it should be. And I think our players thrive off of that environment. And you know, it's kind of ironic. Last time we played the White Sox, we had a pretty big celebration after that one of those games, and now here they are coming back for our first home game this year.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a fun Friday night for a lot of fans. AJ, what did you take out of the first six games, the road trip to kick off the season?
A little bit of everything. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, we got hit with some injuries coming out of spring, but our guys have responded well. You know, I feel like we should have won a game or two in L.A., and then we go up and win this series in Seattle. So it was a tough way to finish it, not getting the sweep. But, you know, our guys have done a pretty good job adjusting from, you know, the schedule change to going out west. And, you know, we were playing 9 a.m. practices for 6 weeks, 1 o'clock games on the East Coast, and now we were on the West Coast. That's not an easy transition, so I thought our guys handled that fine. And a few mistakes would have changed the record on the road trip, but I also think there was a lot of good that got covered up by, you know, a few of those losses. So a little mixture of both, but I think as a manager, watching our guys prepare and watching our guys get into games, and you know, our approaches early in the games have been awesome against really good pitchers. I hope that continues so that we can sort of, you know, get the benefit of that type of preparation into the win column.
You mentioned the injuries, and obviously the biggest position that was hit was center field. And how are you managing the workload of Riley Green in center, when to play him in center, when to keep him in left versus Ryan Kreidler?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've turned to Kreidler a lot, you know, as a defensive first player, and you know, I'm trying to give him some consistent playing time and leave Riley in left field. I gave him a DH day. I'm probably going to give Riley a game off at some point and be, you know, conservative with how much load we put on him. As are with all of our guys. Karp got a day off. All of these guys are not going to play every single game. So I, you know, as far as center field goes, I'm not afraid to play Riley in center. I think it's really important for everyone to know that. The trade-off is really, you know, the defensive first mindset versus trying to squeeze a little bit of extra offense. Now, the better that Margot plays, the more that he plays. The better that Andy Ibanez plays, maybe he mixes in some at bats against righties, which can push McKinstry to the outfield. So it's truly a mix and match of multiple positions. It's not just about center field, but I like the lineup with, you know, Kreidler in center and Riley on a corner and Harp on a corner, specifically with Malloy here. That's probably the general outfield I'm going to go with. Now, I say that, and I'm not going with that today. Riley's in center field today, so I'm just going day by day and sorting out, you know, what to put in, you know, or when to put in, you know, whatever strength we want.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. We're talking to A.J. Hinch this morning, opening day here in Detroit. A lot of talk in the offseason was Colt Keats moving to first. Now Colt Keats back over at second with the Gleyber Torres injury. When we talk to fans and have that conversation about how this lineup changes, is Torres open to playing third base or anywhere else when he's healthy?
We haven't even had the conversation. I don't really know why that would be a topic. I mean, Glaber's our second baseman when he's healthy. Colt, you know, moved to first, and Torque obviously hit his way onto this lineup. It doesn't really change a ton, but it's not even a topic that we've covered or that we've talked about, because we expect Glaber to be our second baseman.
Does that change anything if Torque hits well, because then where does Keith play, right? I mean, it's just a question that we wonder about. How do you get as many of these bats in the lineup as possible?
Well, you saw it. I mean, you saw it in the first trip before Gleyber got hurt. Like, all of those guys were in the lineup every day. So I don't think it really impacts who's in the lineup or how to get the bats in the lineup. I think it impacts kind of positioning. I mean, Carp plays a little more outfield. Torque has DH'd and played first. Colt has DH'd and played first and played second. So it hasn't deterred us from getting the bats in the lineup that we want.
Super excited about the way Torque hit in spring training. I'm sure you guys are as well. And early in the season, and fans want to know what's different from your perspective, and how reliable is it that he can be consistent in whether it's power or just being able to continue to hit and get on base?
Yes, yeah, so can I tell you a funny reaction? When you started that question, I'm like, fans want to know, is he going to do this every day? Like, is he going to hit 550 every day? Like, that's what I thought you were going with. You know, I think what's different for him has been a little bit process-based, you know, in how he's preparing, how he's limiting some of the noise surrounding the offensive side of the game. I mean, he has a game plan. He's simplified it. He's taken an athletic approach where his stance is a tick different. His swing is a tick different. It's nothing that's necessarily all that notable, but there's some rhythm and timing increase, which has been good. And so all you add all that up has been the real adjustment. It's not like it's a magic pill or it's something that he snaps his finger and all of a sudden you're going to see this drastic change. Like, now he's standing 2 feet open, or now he is, you know, I think everybody wants to say, aha, that's what it was. There is a maturation process. There is a little bit of process-based change. There is a little bit of a mechanical slight tweak and a confident hitter coming into the season. So I like how he came into the season and had some immediate success, because I think that microscope is on this guy, you know, 24/7. But, you know, it's sustainable to the extent that, you know, he's just got to stay in the fight whenever things, you know, get a little bit you know, less successful for him, and then he's going to have these peaks of success, which does not mean he has it all figured out. And he's found a good process that I certainly believe in, he believes in, and the production speaks for itself. I mean, he's not going to be perfect. I hope we don't hold him to that bar, because it's a tough sport and it's a difficult skill. But it's hard to deny that he has been a significant breakthrough from spring training on as a potent bat in the middle of the order.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Everybody loves a great redemption story, and his start is exciting and encouraging for Tiger fans. Yeah. Not the only number one overall pick, though, that's got a little juice right now. Casey Mize, I think people are excited to see, right? This is another year beyond Tommy John, and that splitter looks good. What kind of season do you project for Casey?
Yeah, Casey has really stepped up and grabbed this rotation spot. You know, what I've learned about Casey in the last 2 years has been that he's a fighter. Like, when you put him in the competition against other guys, he really did step up. Last year he won the job, and then he wasn't able to hold it. This season he came in knowing full well he wasn't on this team, and he needed to pitch his way onto the team. He dominated, and then he carried it into his first start. It looks like the secondary pitches come with that type of finish, and the sliders are both good. The split has been nasty. He's got a lot of confidence in the zone, which allows him to pound the zone and then get some swing and miss out of the zone. So I think he's a process-based guy, and he needs to go start by start, but he's put together a very, very good foundation to have a very successful season. I mean, he has all the stuff. He has the mindset. He expects the world. I mean, even when I took him out, you know, partway through the game, the other day, I had to make sure that he didn't, you know, get too frustrated and just take negative out of that. And he's done a good job of just staying grounded and staying around the strike zone. So if he does that, then we're gonna stack good starts together, and he's a formidable starting pitcher at this level. And I'm excited for him because it hasn't been easy for him, either through injury, you know, or the opportunity that he didn't get to be on the playoff roster last year, and that he doesn't want to have that taste in his mouth again.
Dylan Dingler has been exciting at the plate. His numbers bear it out. How is his offensive production changing your rotation at catcher? What does that look like throughout the course of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I go kind of the course of the series. You know, I have a hard time when I look at this, like the macro view of the whole season. I have no idea how life's going to be in the next 6 months. But I can tell you that series by series, I went into the season expecting, you know, a couple series are going to be Jake 2 out of 3, and a couple series are going to be Dingler 2 out of 3. And that's kind of how it's playing out. I mean, I like, you know, Tarik and Jake working together. I like Dingler and Flaherty working together, and I'm going to mix and match the rest. And there may be a time where I flip Scooble and Flaherty with different catchers, just the way the schedule works. But we have two formidable catchers. They have different strengths, but they both have strengths. They have different things that we're guarded against, and we're going to work around those things. So I still see them as two viable guys that could catch the majority of games, but somebody's going to catch more than the other. But that has to play itself out more than I've like labeled one of them one thing or another. They're both going to catch. And as you saw last year when Carson Kelly was here, it's good when you have options and you don't feel like you're taking a step back regardless of who you put behind the plate.
AJ, you got a busy day. We'll get you out of here on this. Torpedo bats, how do you feel about them?
I think it's funny how much love and attention they're getting. I mean, I see the science behind it, and it makes sense if you're going to hit the ball towards the label that the fatter the barrel is, the better. I don't think it's like the perfect solution for everybody, but I think it's a copycat league, and there's going to be a lot of guys that are curious if that can solve some of the issues offensively that torment players in this level. But you know, I see it as sort of an evolution of how to combat some of the different shapes of the pitches, or the different style of pitching nowadays, or the velocity, and where you're not making perfect contact on that little small barrel that we were all accustomed to. They're legal. They're not new. These have been around for a few years. They're just now mainstream part of the conversation. And it sort of makes me laugh because I think this stuff happens all the time. But I see when it's associated to being like all of a sudden a homer bat, I have a little bit of skepticism that it's going to solve 30 teams' homer issues.
How long would it take if somebody wanted to switch to a torpedo bat? Is there an adjustment period, or is it, hey, as long as it weighs the same, it swings the same?
So it won't be the same. So you could take the exact same bat and have it be 34-inch, 32-ounce, which is a sort of standard stock, you know, size bat, and have it be the same. It's weighted different. Where the weight is, it's going to be a little bit handle heavy, not you know, like there's some guys that cup their bats. That makes it a little bit more barrel friendly. If you don't cup your bat, it makes it a little bit top heavy. So the feel of the bat is, you're bringing up a great point, because that's what players are going to have a hard time with when it comes to any bats. Now, I've watched players go through four different model bats. They're going to chase the bat until they get hits. Like they definitely we'll try anything. And so I think it has to feel right. That's a great point, because athletes need to feel like their equipment they're using is giving them the best chance. And that's why you'll see guys working into the BP and then make a determination whether or not it's a gamer. The gamer is pretty well protected, but players are unafraid to change if they think it can help them.
Hey, AJ, appreciate your time today. Have fun later today at the ballpark, all right?
You got it.
Happy opening
day. Appreciate you guys. Yeah, we'll see you. Bye.
It's AJ Hinch, Tiger Manager, 97.1.